Oklahoma's peak wildfire season is November to late March, which means we are in the thick of it. What can we do to prevent wildfires and keep our home safe? Find out in this Inside OSU podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inside OSU podcast. I am your host, Megan Robinson, and today is all about wildfire. Joining me is fire ecology specialist John Weir from OSU Extension. And we were talking a little bit before we started recording about your title and your role here. Can you just elaborate about that a little bit?
Yeah, I work in the Natural Resource Ecology Management Department in the College of Ag and Natural Resources, and I do extension teaching and research. I get to do all three legs of the land grant mission, but I work with all the aspects of fire ecology, effects of fire on plant communities, wildlife, livestock, and then I also teach people how to set fires. You know, we work with prescribed fire.
Why would someone want to set a fire?
Really and truly, again, all of our plant communities in this state, actually throughout the country and the world, most all the native plant communities and wildlife are adapted to fire. And fire was the biggest thing that Native Americans used to shape the landscape. It's one of the main reasons that we're having a lot of these wildfires, and the size of them are getting larger and things like that, is because of the lack of fire. And so we're getting fuel buildup and accumulation of plants and stuff that are not fire adaptive, but add to the fuel and the chemistry of those fires and make them more intense and more volatile. And again, a lot of that is all due to lack of fire.
That's so, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So you start fires in some areas to essentially control a wildfire.
You definitely can, yes. And a lot of that is, and there's a lot of fire that gets done with that. I guess one of the things to point out, Oklahoma is one of the main four states that do a lot of prescribed burning, with Kansas, Florida, and Georgia being in the mix. But in Oklahoma, we intentionally burn anywhere from a million and a half to 2 million acres per year. And whereas in the last 10 years, on average, there's less than 500,000 acres, even around 200,000 acres burned by wildfire. But again, what do we hear about? You don't hear about the 2 million acres that are intentionally burned every year. We hear about the 200-acre wildfire over here. You know, that's what makes the news and doing all that. So it's out there, and a lot of people just don't know it and don't understand it. But again, it's one of the biggest parts or the biggest factors that play into probably one of the increases in wildfire and the size of wildfires that we have.
We're going to get into wildfires in just a couple questions.
Yep.
But I want to circle back to fire ecology specialist.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on it in your first answer, but can you elaborate on what exactly it is that you do?
So what I do is, again, I work, again, doing research and extension and outreach to landowners and agencies throughout the state and throughout the nation on the effects of fire on plant communities, again, how it impacts plant growth, you know, timing of fires, and looking at that. Also, again, plant impacts on animal life, habitat, also livestock production, as for the, you know, the landowner and the ranching aspects of it. And then I teach landowners and agency people, you know, how to set proper prescribed fires.
Wildfire season is upon us. How would you assess Oklahoma's wildfire risk this season?
We can have wildfires in this state any month of the year. They can occur. And so again, we're calling a wildfire as a fire that gets out of control, that is not set intentionally. There's lots of sources that we see that can come from wildfires. Biggest majority of them, again, being human caused type fires. A lot of them are incidental, you know, power lines slapping together on extremely windy days, someone driving down the road, dragging a muffler, having a blowout on a tire, you know, running on the rim, causing sparks. There's all kinds of ignitions that are out there that can cause a wildfire. But wildfires occur most any month of the year. But again, our biggest factors that in our biggest time of year that we have wildfires is typically November through first part of April into March. And this is due to the fact that, number one, it's most everything goes dormant in Oklahoma. So all of our grasses, those fuels and stuff are dormant. So they're not actively growing. That gives you all kinds of dried out fuel. Secondly, the winter months are the driest time of year in Oklahoma. January, February, and December are the three driest months in the state. We receive the least amount of rainfall on average during those 3 months. Also, again, a lot of our frontal systems and our weather patterns that we have are conducive. We get a lot of these north wind fronts, these cold fronts that come through, and most of them are dry. They're usually not associated with much moisture at all, and so they dry the atmosphere out. That's where we get those extreme dry conditions. March is the biggest wildfire month. We typically have the most wildfires. We've typically seen a lot of the biggest wildfires during the month of March, and that's typically because, again, everything's dried out at the end of that dormant season, fixing to start greening up, but we still are extremely dry. But also, March is the windiest month of the year in Oklahoma. And if you look at the biggest factor that puts wildfires at risk, it's about wind. It's not about really dry, extreme conditions. Again, that definitely helps the wildfire as long as it's got wind to push it and make it grow and get bigger. Because again, you think about it, if you start a fire with no wind or in a vacuum, a fire just spreads like a little circle. You know, it just slowly spreads outward because there's nothing pushing it. But you add wind to that mix and it's going to take it into a direction. And you add a lot of wind and it takes it quickly. And then you add the dry conditions of dormant season along with those winds, and then you get some extreme conditions that cause some pretty extreme and large wildfires that we've seen here in the state over the past decade or two.
We're also in a drought right now in Oklahoma. We have not had a ton of rain at all in the last year.
That's exactly right. And you know, right now, you know, again, we're really dry, continuing to dry. Again, not a lot of relief looks like in the extended forecasts coming up. As of right now, you know, we've got biggest majority of the western part of the state is well over 100 days since they've had a quarter of inch of rainfall. We're really dry. The drought index is continuing to creep up, continuing to get larger across the state, the areas that are impacted by that. And we get some little events that give you a little bit of relief, but they're typically short-lived. You know, it's just like snowfall. A lot of times people think, oh, we got snow, we can do different things. And snow doesn't last very long in Oklahoma. You know, most of the time, you know, 24 hours and we're done. You know,
we just saw that too.
And we just saw that. That's also a big impact on wildfires, because a lot of times people have this misconception that we're going to go out and we got snow on the ground, let's go burn these brush piles because it's not going anywhere. Well, that's a good thought at the time. But again, like I said, the snow doesn't typically last very long. Most all the grass is what we call one-hour fuels. So actually all it does is take about an hour of drying for them to dry out and to start burning again. And so that's typically what happens is people go out and burn brush piles during a snowfall event, get it burnt, and then a day or two later, another strong wind event comes up and blows the embers around, because those brush piles will burn for days, even weeks, and you've got a wildfire on your hand. And so just to get that point across, the best time to burn brush piles in Oklahoma and this part of the world is May and June. When things green up, we've got typically good moisture and things like that, is to burn it during those times. That's the safest time to do that, not when it snows.
When I think about wildfires, I think of the recent ones in California, mm-hmm. or Australia, and how quickly they spread.
Yeah.
How do you respond to a fire, and can you slow them down? Because you were talking earlier about the intentionally set fire. So, like, what are the control aspects of that versus a wildfire?
So kind of the differences between a prescribed burn and a wildfire is, so a prescribed burn is set under a specific set of conditions. So we pick the wind direction, we pick wind speeds, we pick relative humidities, we pick temperatures, we pick the day. We also pick the area where we want to burn. So we have a burn unit that's done out, and then we typically put fire breaks around that burn unit to help contain and control the fire, and then have equipment assembled and then set that fire and conduct that. A wildfire occurs whenever. Right?
Right.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And typically, again, the ones we hear about are set on days that are extreme. So extremely windy, really dry, those favorable conditions, that's when they get out and get going. Again, like I said, we can have wildfires any day of the year. But again, we don't hear about the little bitty ones that, you know, burn way less than an acre because there's no wind or it's really green. You know, it's just not going anywhere. Those conditions aren't conducive. But it's the big ones that we hear about under those extreme conditions. So a wildfire, we have no control over the day it gets set, under what conditions it gets set, and then where it's going to go. That's the big difference. And then the other biggest factor, which again, yes, the fire impacts people's lives, but also the smoke impacts people. And with a prescribed fire, we can manage that smoke as well.
Again, how?
We pick days that, again, are good weather conditions, atmospheric conditions, so that smoke goes up, gets up in the atmosphere, and then the winds take it away. And we can pick a direction that we want it to go. So that's the day we burn. So we keep it off that house or that community or that highway. We don't burn in those directions. We burn in a different direction to keep that smoke. What about wildfire smoke? You know, it's up to the whim of the fire, when it occurs and where it's going to go and where that smoke. And typically the amount of smoke produced is typically a lot more. Because, again, you've got more things burning in that wildfire because of the conditions that it's burning under and things like that. So there's a lot of trade-offs. So good fire versus bad fire. You know, we call wildfires bad fire. Prescribed fire is good fire. There is good fire. A lot of times people don't realize that and understand it, but there is good fire. And so what we've got to do is work to control the bad fire. And we can do that with good fire, and we can do that with other things that we do as well.
With these prescribed fires, though, I mean, you pick the day, you look at the elements. You guys are all experts in this field, so I trust your judgment. Mm-hmm. But you can't control the weather. Like, mm-hmm. you can look at the forecast, but the weather is always subject to change. So how do you deal? Like, what if the wind is like, it's going to be northwest, and then all of a sudden it changes to southeast?
So with a prescribed fire, typically what we do, and again, what we recommend, the forecasts are good enough that you can see the 180 wind degree switches. And we definitely recommend that we don't burn within 12 to 24 hours of any predicted frontal passage, because you don't know when that wind's going to exactly shift. You know, they say, well, it might shift about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and then at 10 o'clock, it does it. So don't be out there setting a fire when that's going to happen. Weather's weather, the forecaster's best guess of what's going to happen. So you have to live with that and go with that. But there are certain things that you do look at, like those frontal passages and things like that, that are going to really get you. The other stuff you just learn to deal with. You know, there's always a little bit of variability in the wind. Sometimes they don't get that. And again, that's where your equipment and that's where your experience and stuff comes in, and having enough people to work on that fire and to do that makes a big difference.
I'm an animal lover, mm-hmm. So I just have to ask about these poor little animals? How are their habitats impacted by wildfires?
Typically, it's short-lived. Fire goes through and burns up a lot of cover. A lot of it depends on scale. So how big is that fire is how big an impact. Also, it depends on the species of animal. You have a cotton rat. They live in a small area, so they can be impacted within that, or a rabbit. You know, their home range is small, so they're going to be impacted for a little while. But again, a lot of times this stuff is going to recover, and it recovers rapidly from fire because it's adapted to fire over centuries and centuries of fire by Native Americans. You know, in this region, it's adapted to it. Larger animals, they have a larger home range. It's all about scale. But then a lot of times people worry about, well, what about animals dying in fire? And it's not a concern. Now, does it happen? Yes, it can happen. But most animals have three abilities. They have the ability to either flee, so they run out ahead of it. Animals are not innately feared of fire like we see TV has portrayed it in a lot of things. I've seen snakes crawl along the edge of a fire line trying to crawl through the fire. You know, they just
unbothered.
They're just they feel the heat and then they move back. So again, most animals again can flee. So they run, get ahead of it, or look for breaks in it and go through it. Or they fly, so they can fly away. Or they burrow under, so they have the ability. You know, they live underground,
and that's protection.
And that's protection, because again, the heat from a fire, even prescribed fire or wildfire, doesn't typically penetrate the soil more than a quarter of an inch.
Wow.
Because think about it, heat's rising, so it's not
true.
Going down.
Right.
Also, the fire does not linger. Most wildfires and even prescribed fires move quickly across the ground. Yes, they may be creating temperatures up to 800,000 degrees, but it's all going up. It's not penetrating into the soil and going down, and it's also moving quickly. And so that heat just doing it. So it's like thinking about you light a candle, you can pass your hand over that flame, you know, as long as you do it quickly, mm-hmm. it won't burn you. But right. you slow that thing down. And so that's where if you've got a buildup of fuel, long time where there hasn't been any fire, you've got a forest situation where there's a lot of ice damage, limbs down, a lot of leaf litter built up. Now that has a long-term fire, and that can have more impact. So again, the least fire you have out there can cause greater impacts on wildlife and on plant communities there because of the heavy fuel loads.
I just feel better knowing that the animals are ultimately, you know, grand scheme of things, they're okay and they know how to deal with this wildfire. Because I hate thinking about like the little, you know, bunnies and armadillos. Yep. Like,
they all have places that they typically go. Again, there is, and then also the thing is, a lot of times too, we have to think about the benefit of that fire after the effect is greater on that population than not burning. You're going to start seeing declines in those species because they don't like that type of habitat. Again, work that we've done, and you know, one of the biggest issues that we have, not only in Oklahoma, but throughout the Great Plains and even worldwide, is that grassland birds are the largest declining guild of birds in the world. The birds that are adapted to grassland areas, which is like most of Oklahoma.
Right.
And so again, as we have trees invading our prairies, such as eastern red cedar that we have here in Oklahoma, one study we did, we found that as few as 4 cedar trees per acre, certain grassland species quit using that area. So they leave.
Oh, wow.
And so then you're starting to see a species go into decline. And that's what we're seeing worldwide with grassland birds, is a huge decline. And the biggest reason of that is lack of fire and woody encroachment on those prairie openings and stuff.
So some of these prescribed fires will hopefully bring them back.
Correct.
To Oklahoma. Correct. To their natural habitat.
Yeah, maintain that habitat to what we've got.
I'm learning so much. This is also interesting to me. As we talked about earlier, Oklahoma's in a drought. We are in prime wildfire season. The weather, we can't control it. So what, if anything, can we do to sort of decrease our risk and improve our safety during a wildfire?
A lot of times we can't prevent it because it's beyond our control, and it's due to weather and it's due to whatever ignition source starts it. First thing is, look around your house, and typically the first 5 feet around that house is the most important. So you want to look at, what do I have that is flammable right next to my house? Wooden decks. You know, so if I have a wooden deck built onto my house, what do I need to do? And I have a wooden deck on my house. And so it's one of my concerns. And so what have I done? I put skirting around the deck so stuff cannot blow under and accumulate underneath that wood deck. I want to make sure that I do that. If it does, we need to get underneath there and clean it out, because we don't want an ember falling through that or blowing underneath that deck and then starting that wooden deck on fire. Then it's going to advance to increase the chances of my house catching on fire. Patio furniture stored on the patio over winter, bring the cushions in. Not only it will help save the cushions, but it will also get less place for embers. If you have a lot of deciduous trees around your house and the leaves pile up in the corner or pile up in the eave and the guttering and stuff, clean those out. You know, any avenue that we can think of right there. Also, if you have any kind of flammable vegetation planted right next to your house, so you have some type of evergreen that grow that's planted really close proximity of your house, you either need to remove it or prune it up 5 to 6 feet so that if a fire does come, it doesn't get in the canopy of that tree and cause a big fire. It stays on the ground or in the surface. Also, think about the mulch that you have in your flower beds and stuff. Is it flammable mulch? What do I need to do to keep it from igniting? And then you start to look further away from your house, and same thing, what do we have close by? Prune, you know, evergreen trees that are really flammable. Wood pile. Another thing, if you have a fireplace or wood burning stove, don't stack the wood on your porch. You know, that's convenient, man. It is. When it's cold, you don't want to run all the way out, but stack it away from the house. Because again, if an ember gets into that, you can do that. Think about your outbuildings, barns, things, shops, things like that that you have. Do the same thing. Look around the perimeter of it. Make sure things aren't there. make sure you keep the windows and the doors shut so errant embers, if there was a fire that occurred, they don't go blowing inside and find something flammable inside. Same thing with your house. Also, you know, those are the kind of the big things to really look for. A lot of it's about building materials, and you know, a lot of times, you know, brick homes are less chances of getting ignition because they've got brick. That asphalt shingles, you know, most all of our shingles are asphalt shingles. They're not, they will catch on fire, but it takes a large ember a long time to burn through asphalt shingles. So embers raining down on the roof of most houses isn't much of a problem, but if you've got leaves in the guttering or leaves piled up on the roof, that could be an aspect of doing that.
All of that is such great advice. And if people want to know more about this, is there any website through Oklahoma State that they can visit to get all this information or just learn more about wildfires and prescribed fires?
Yeah. They can go to OK State Extension and look at publications. We have several publications. We have one really good one on, it's about wildfire and protecting the ranch and farm from wildfire, and talks about a lot of these things that we have talked about, plus other issues, especially in rural areas, about what you need to do to protect your homes and stuff like that.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Inside OSU podcast. I am Megan Robinson, and that was John Weir, Fire Ecology Specialist at Oklahoma State. For more Inside OSU podcasts, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.